Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting, broadcasting, broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world, to the world, to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth. On the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Souls the channel. Sports in Depth is the show. And we're on with John Coltrane. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. Have your will, have your way. We thank you, dear Lord, for little things we so largely take for granted. Thank you for blessings unseen. Forthcoming, have come, all of merit. We ask you, dear Lord, not to give us what we want. Give us what we need. We need thee every hour. We thank you for your darling son Jesus that died on the cross so we may have the right tree of life. And we just want to thank you for being our God. For you're God all by yourself. And you may not be everybody's God, but our question, dear Lord, you are one true God. As a man once said, although we may not live on Park Avenue, by the grace of God, we don't live on Park Avenue. We ask you blessings in the name of your darling son Jesus in the prayer that he taught us to pray. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom, thy will be done on earth as in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread and forgive us trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Now in the power and the glory forever. In the holy name of Jesus. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth. On the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Endeavor Show. This is a Melrose game. Sports Endeavor, as always, the continuation of Black History Month. So we have some interviews for you. And you know, this year, the Melrose game is the first time ever that it's not going to be, one, on a Friday. It's going to be on Saturday. And it will not be at the legendary famed Madison Square Garden. It's going to be up at the Armory, up there in the area of Washington Heights. And one of the things I had posed, and you'll listen to that during the course of the show, and it was first brought up by, as I was thinking about it too, by one of my colleagues. And the question that was posed, you know, two things. Has it lost prestige? And has it lost sponsors by it not being in Madison Square Garden? And it was said, and you'll hear in interviews, that the Armory, for all intents and purposes, is a better venue for the runners, as the track is conducive to speed, better times, and world records. And as far as not being in Madison Square Garden, well, it was said by a couple of athletes, well, you know, it's still in New York City. And in talking to some of the athletes today, they said, you know what, I have ran in Madison Square Garden. So it's not like I never have run there. And one runner had said, you know, yes, had I never run in Madison Square Garden, there would have been a void. But there is no void. And now, as I was an amateur when I ran in the garden, this was the thing, too, that was talked about by a lot of the journalists and some of the sports writers and experts that, you know, the novice liked Madison Square Garden, liked saying, hey, you know, I ran in Madison Square Garden. But as a professional, and it was, as a young lady had said, well, we'll speak out later, as a professional, it's the Armory. It's a faster track. It's a better track. It's conducive to records, it's conducive to speed, which is advantageous, and it's a track that's more comfortable than the one that is
put in temporarily, you know, for the Melrose game at Madison Square Garden. So it is history in the making, and I didn't think, and as I look back now at last year's Melrose game, because I'm looking at the Melrose game cover, as you remember, the cover of last year's Melrose game was kind of, I guess, a collector's item. We had the Brazilian pole vaulter, the lovely Fabienne Amira, who we had right here on Sports in Depth, and she was the feature. She's on the cover, and as apropos, last year she won the pole vault. Also, the Melrose game was done in January last year, January 28th. So this year it's a new month. This year it's a new venue. And this year it's a new day. And in talking to some of the athletes, and one in particular, it was said it was time for change. To a certain degree, it was time for change. It was time to move on. It was time to, I guess, come out of Madison Square Garden. That being said and done, well, it is being done. And I was, it was Bernard Lagat who said that. And Lagat, as you know, is, wow, is he? He's the whole six American indoor and outdoor records, 8-time winner of the Melrose game, want to make a mile, 2-time world indoor and 2-time world outdoor gold medalist, 2-time Olympic medalist, 4-time USA outdoor champion. Okay, for a guy that's only 134 pounds, he is a giant. And indoor national champions, 2004 Olympics, 15-meter silver medalist. He won the bronze in the 2000 Olympics, 2-time world outdoor 3000 gold medalist, and it goes on and on. American indoor record holder in the 1500 meters, mile. American outdoor record holder in the 1500, 3000, 5000, 11-time NCAA All-American in cross country and track and field 1999, and saw NCAA indoor male athlete of the year. 1999 Pac-10 Men's Track and Field Co-Athlete of the Year. It is just, you know, it goes on and on. But one of the things he had said was that, it was time for change. And you know what? We're going to talk to him. One of the surprises, and it's really not a surprise, but last week the Super Bowl was won by the New York Giants. And this week, Sonya Richards Ross, of the player from the Giants, is his wife, is running. She said it's just apropos that on successive weekends, they are participating in historic events. You know, Ross returns to compete at the Armory for the first time since setting the national high school record at the Armory for St. Thomas Aquinas High School from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 10 years ago. And so she's coming back to where she's had some success. But let's go and talk to the president, the man who the executive director of the Armory Foundation, Norbert W. Sander Jr. And you know, Norbert is a former New York City Marathon winner. But let's talk to him and get a feel for what's happening here. As Sports in Depth is doing our Melrose Game special, and of course, we continue our Black History special. You know, February, this is the month in 1964 where Cassius Marcellus Clay beat Sonny Liston for the heavyweight champion of the world. When they would fight again, there's that classic line that I hear, and so many would say, "My name ain't Cassius anymore. My name ain't Cassius anymore. It's Muhammad Ali." And the night he won was just some kind of night. I remember on that fight, "I'm a bad man. I shook up the world. I must be the greatest. I talk to the real God every day." And the thing about Ali that night was paying homage to other people, service to others, Da Vinci Pepe on earth. And there goes Sam Cooke, the world's greatest singer. You know, singing out, he had Joe Louis in his corner that night. In fact, he had Joe Louis and Sugar Ray Robinson in his corner, his idols. There's a picture that his great friend Howard Bingham took down, I remember, at the John McEnroe Gallery. And it was a picture of him sitting there with Sugar Ray Robinson and Joe Louis. And he said, "This is one of my favorite pictures." He said, "These are my heroes. These are my idols." Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports and Depth of the show. It is a Millsville game special, as well as a continuation of Black History Part 4. And I got some interesting things, a little Motown history for you, too, here. But now, let's talk to the doctor as he talks about the 105th Millsville game at the Armory.
You talked about something that was very profound, you know, and we've been 100 years at Madison Square Garden where the track really wasn't conducive to the runners, and we're moving to a better facility, and not so much about history as we're kind of improving things and moving into the 21st century.
That's right. You know, not everything in life stays the same. Mm-hmm. You know, back before, there were not indoor tracks. Then we had indoor tracks. Now we're having better indoor tracks. The facility at Madison Square Garden, because of the configuration of the ice hockey rink, they cannot make a bigger track than 11 laps. So the normal modern-day tracks that we have at World Indoor Championships are 200-meter bank tracks, and that's what we have at the Armory. The new generation, the kids of today, they want to run on these new tracks that are faster, and they can have better performances, and that's where the migration is towards. So many of the athletes just are not interested to run on the tight 11-lap tracks because they can't run fast on it.
They're coming at you with, well, you know, the garden is more prestigious. They're coming at you, whatever, the sponsors. It's about what's best for the sport and those participating in the sport.
Well, and I think it's about practicality and sustainability. You've got to be able to pay for what you have. And so if you can put 25,000 people in the stands in the garden, then maybe there's a financial viability to it. There's a legacy for the future. Can we sustain the Millrose Games? And the answer was, it needed to move in order to survive. And that's where the Armory made that decision. And they can fill the stadium up at the Armory. We'll have great performances. And we got to look to the future. And that's where the future is. The young athletes in high school ran at the Armory. So they're used to running on these fast tracks.
It's home, it's relaxing.
Yeah, and that's where they want to put these top marks out there, and the Armory is the place that they feel most comfortable doing.
It's still New York. Just said, hey, it's good coming to New York. It doesn't have to be New York now. It's New York City.
Right.
And what you're doing for this community, it's going to really bring a whole new crop of runners. As Peter was saying, you know, you're going to have enhancement of now. A lot of the Latin ladies get a chance to run. You're bringing in a new generation, and you're helping not only New York City, but the community.
And what's wonderful about the Millrose Games is that there's a place for the high school runners, there's a place for the college runners, and there's a place for the professional runners. Yes, we have more college races, and it brings all these athletes together under one umbrella, and it promotes the sport.
Well, you've done a great job.
Hey, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you very much.
Doc Stanley, Sports and Death.
Yeah,
that was actually. We're going to get the doctor on there, but that was the meet director. In fact, a former Millsville participant himself, Richard P. Finn, and in fact, he's dubbed as the greatest miler out of Ireland. And it was, you know, it was amazing now that he was saying, in spite of the attendance, in spite of the appearance, the Millsville game was losing money. And I guess if you can sponsor the Millsville game in Madison Square Garden, you can come uptown. I mean, New York is still New York. Let's get going now. We have some more of him and the president talking about the Millsville game.
The first World Indoor Championships began in the 80s.
Wow.
And so when those Indoor World Championships began, then the 200-meter tracks became dominant, and it became the place where athletes would run around, want to qualify, want to perform, and there were permanent tracks. And so, for the most part, that's what we're seeing around the world, these permanent indoor 200-meter bank tracks, and that's the future of the indoor running.
And you say indoor running was American.
Well, indoor running became the history of indoor running became popular in the United States.
Why?
Well, we probably had those arenas built before other countries did.
Now
big coliseums that were multi-purpose facilities. Yeah, and I think it took off, and then they started to build indoor arenas around the world. But they built permanent tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And so the evolution changed from these I remember running in Ottawa with 13 laps to a mile.
Wow.
I mean, you spend your whole time trying not to fall off the edge. And you watch the quarter milers run, God almighty, you watch those guys, and they could get injured, and they did many times, going as fast as they could and just falling off the side. So it's much more efficient when you have a nice oval to run up, safer for running quicker around. Visibility is better for the spectators. It's just a change. I mean, as I said, there's an evolution in every sport, and that's why our sport has evolved to these faster tracks.
His time has come, thank God.
That's just life.
Thank you, Rick.
Yeah.
Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul of the Channel, Sports Depth of the show, the man who put the meet together this year, Raymond P. Flynn, former participant and Millsville game, in fact, one of the fine runners of his era. And I remember at the press conference today, they were saluting him for just putting an outstanding meet together. And one of the runners said, there's so many outstanding runners here that it just pushes the adrenaline. I mean, you want to be here, you want to do well, you're going to be pushed well. It's like a fight card, just really outstanding fighters, good fighters, great fighters, outstanding fighters, and his hat should be taken off to him. 105th Millsville game, but it's historic. But he said his time had come. And the president of the Armory.
It seems coming to the Armory, track has finally arrived where it should be and where the most events have taken place. Well, it's true. More track takes place here every year than any place in the world, frankly. We get, 7 days a week almost. Not almost, 7 days a week. Some weeks we have, a few weeks ago over Christmas, we had in 5 days between Christmas and New Year's, we had 8 meets, 20,000 competitors in a period of 5 days. At the same time, we've got youth, we got high school, we've got college, and the pros. The pros love it here. And here's the other side of it. The pros and the Olympians, they love to have a stage. We appreciate it. We appreciate them here. This is track city here in New York City.
And not only that, too. It's unbelievable where the amateur, the pro, the Olympic all come together. And you said something, too. Not only what it does to the community for the future, what it does for the present now.
That's right. Exactly. Well, here we are. I mean, that is the point. We're not necessarily waiting for something to happen next year. We're not waiting for anything to happen. The future is right now. And we got a great meet coming up, I have to say. Ray has put together a terrific field. And we want to create, and I think we have, a platform for these athletes at every level to perform. So they're appreciated. They're on the stage. And they really feel that they're being appreciated.
Another feather in your cap. You got to feel good. You deserve just a hell of a job. I'm sorry. I mean, you got the Mill Rose game at the Armory. What a feather in your cap.
Well, let's ask me that question at 10:05 on February 11th, and you and I can have a drink together here to appreciate it. But I think we're going to get there. I think we're going to get there. And we really want to make this work. It's good for uptown here. It's good for New York City. And this is the place, And we're going to prove it. I think we're going to prove it to the world. That this is a place for the Mill Rose games.
Hey, with your work, your leadership, and what the community has, there's no question. His time has come, and congratulations.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Johnny.
Keep coming. Keep following us.
Doctor's always, anytime I see him, he's always, hey, thanks for coming. Thanks a lot for being here. And he's done an outstanding job. That's Dr. Norbert W. Sander, Jr., M.D., the executive director of the Armory Foundation. And the who interviews before that was Richard P. Flynn, who is the meet director and a former racing champion himself as the doctor. I said he won the New York City Marathon back in the day, as they say. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports and Death of the show. The program says 105th Millrose game, the Armory, Uptown Saturday night, and that's what it is. And this is going to have a host of, a host of outstanding people, Olympic champions, and I saw a little statue there of my good buddy Ray Lump. Ray was the captain of the 1948 basketball team that won the gold medal for the United States. As we were winning all the gold medals in basketball back in that time, and some of the people that are going to be there tomorrow. Interesting fact, too, that, Mary Decker first ran at the Garden back in 1974, and she won the Millrose 1000 at age 15. Her time of 2:01.8 still remains the national high school indoor record in the 800, 38 years later. As you know, she went on to become an Olympian. It's just LaShawn Merritt and Natasha Hastings, you know, she was on our show last year too, have won Olympic gold medals for the United States in the 400, 4x4. They both will be competing. Some other names, and at today's press conference, that will be tomorrow. Because yeah, I was, you know, it's funny. I was just sitting there talking to the legendary PR man, Dave Hersher, who for so many years worked with the incomparable, legendary Jerry Goldstein. And it's just, I said, you know, this is usually on a Friday night, and it's usually in the garden. And he said, yeah, but, you know, it's not. It's changed. Bernard Loggett will be running tomorrow. Also going to have Jenny Simpson. And let's give you a little dossier on Jenny. She's a 2:11 U.S. indoor champion, mile in 3,000, two-time U.S. outdoor steeplechase champion, 07-09, 2011 USA outdoor runner-up, third at the 2008 Olympic trials, third at the 2010 U.S. outdoors in the 5,000, three-time NCAA champion, 06-09 and 08. And we're also going to have tomorrow night at the Affair, and Matthew Centuris, U.S. Championship, 2011 U.S. Outdoor Champion, 2008 USA Junior, 5,000 meters champion, LaShawn Merritt. We talked about LaShawn. Anytime he win a gold medal, you know, that is nothing to sneeze at. And the wife of the Super Bowl champion, Sonya Richards-Ross, career highlights, 2011 inducted into the University of Texas Hall of Fame, Alana. World champion 4x4, 2010, and then 2009, two-time world champion. You know, I had a really nice time talking with David Oliver. David, as we look at his highlights, David, USA Championships, 2008 Olympic Trials champion, a two-time USA Outdoor champion, 2010, 2011, International Championships, 2008 Olympic gold. Games, he won a bronze in that, 2010 World Indoor Bronze Medalist, Collegiate Championship, two-time NCAA All-American, and he was the 2010 Jesse Owens Athlete of the Year Award winner, and the Hurdles American record holder. And we started talking about football. No. I'm not talking about football. I'm talking about football, F-U-T-B-O-L. And he is a... he's an avid soccer lover, as Americans would say, as I've become. And he knows his team, has his own team. We were talking about the World Cup. We were talking about the future World Cup games coming up in 2014 in Brazil. And he has his own team. I told the funny story of when I was in São Paulo. It was last year. Me and Dios. Dercio Cotamasso Jr., international promoter, and the guy who got me to be a Corinthians fan. The Corinthians won the championship again, and that's my good friend Monica Fortaleza. You know, the devout love and devotion and fellowship that the Brazilians have for their football teams. I mean, you know, Monica and Ivo and Guillaume and my nephew, they're São Paulo fans. That's the team they like. And when I told them Corinthians, even though it's like being in New York City and you're a Yankee fan, even though there's the Giants and the Dodgers in the old days here, because the old days you had Giants, Dodgers, Yankee fans. And I told them, no, you can't be Corinthians, Melvin. And Dercio calls my room. Says, I got two tickets. You want to go to the game tonight? Yeah, I had never been to a professional football game in Brazil. So I went. And guy meets us there, he shakes my hand. Hey, this is Doc Stanley from New York. So we sit down. They're playing one of their, Corinthians playing one of their biggest foes, like the Yankees and the Boston Red Sox or the Giants and the Dodgers. And they lost the game. And me and Dercio were having lunch the next day. And Dercio told me, he said, Stanley, you know, my friend, you know, he's a really big fan. He's, you know, so for, you know, we lost last night. He was saying, you know, this year, I think, you know, in the future, you know, you don't, your friend, you know, maybe he's bad. Like, no, don't bring him to any more games. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Solar Channel. Sports and Death is the show. We're talking Blizzard game. And we're going to talk to some more of the participants tomorrow, David Oliver. We're going to talk to the legendary Myla, and the man considered probably maybe the greatest of all time. Nobody has won as many as he has. Tomorrow, the Empire State Building will celebrate the 105th Millsville game, lit blue and white this weekend for the most renowned indoor meet. The Empire State Building will be turned blue and white, the official colors of the 105th Millsville game Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights. Top of New York City's tallest building will be lit blue and white in honor of Saturday's Millsville game taking place at the Armory New Balance Track and Field Center. The country's top men and women track and field athletes, along with the finest collegiate and high school athletes, will showcase their talents during the famed New York City indoor meet. President of the Millsville game, Dr. Norbert Stander, thanked the Empire State Building for the tribute and said, "I can't think of a higher honor for the Armory to welcome the track and field athletes from around the world to New York City than the Empire State Building shining blue and white, the official colors of the Millsville game. This is above and beyond." You know, it's sort of, in the words of Howard Weston, sad and touching that as we move into the 21st century, that the Empire State Building is still the tallest building in New York City. And we know why. Let's do a little Black History Month now. Take a break. We'll get back to the Millsville game with some more interviews and some more insights and in-depth information. But it's Black History Month, and let's take a look at some things. I told you about Muhammad Ali winning the heavyweight championship of the world in February of 1964, beating Sonny Liston, the man who reigned the longest as heavyweight champion of the world, and the idol of millions, Joseph Louis Barrows. Joe Louis was born in 1914, passed away in 1981, was buried in Arlington National Cemetery. Saw the hypocrisy behind that, the way the government, here's a man who donated whole purses to the government, and then turned around and found himself with a bill of of over $1 million. I mean, that's just sad and touching when and you look back at that whole situation. And but Joe reigned for 12 years. Nobody reigned as long in the history of boxing. And the thing about it was, you know, Joe to get the title from to get the title shot against James J. Braddock, he had to sign an agreement that he would give 10% of his purses for the next 10 years to Braddock, which was never done before. And so that's a long time. I mean, that's 10 years. A lot of guys don't fight 10 years, but it was basically in essence saying his entire career. As it was, we find out what came down then was that Joe only had 2 years where all his money was his. The rest is history. I mean, when you talk about Joe Louis, the most famous fight was his 1930 rematch when Germany's Max Schmeling, with Max Schmeling, the whole world was looking at the fight. Germany was tearing up Europe, and Schmeling was a symbol of the evil. All America was in Joe's corner. I remember what the legendary late coach Eddie Robinson from Grambling told me, and I remember this as if it was yesterday. And Coach Robinson said something that I'll never forget. He said he remembered the ring announcer that night when Joe Louis came into the ring. The ring announcer said, "And the American Joe Louis is entering the ring." And Coach Robinson told me that was the first time he had ever heard a black man called an American. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports and Death of the Show. We're doing our Black History segment now, and we're featuring and talking about none other than the Brown Bomber, the legendary Joseph Louis Barrows. Now, a lot of people didn't know that Joe Louis's name was Joe Louis Barrows. And it's so often in the case. And when we talked last week about Angelo Dundee, you know, a lot of people in boxing use different names or deleted their names. In the case of Joe Louis, what he did, he dropped the Barrows and called himself Joe Louis. The Dundee brothers changed their name to Dundee and changed their name because, once again, they didn't want the family to know they were boxing. Sugar Ray Robinson. I remember talking to the actor who played Braddock in the movie. His name escapes me at the time. And we were at an affair, him and the gentleman who played Dundee. And we got a chance to talk, and we were talking. So, you know, Sugar Robinson, that was his real name. And he said, what? Crow, Russell Crowe. I said, yeah, no. I said, his real name was Walker Smith Jr. But part of Black history, as we talked about, Ray, mother used to send him to the Salem Crescent Gym to keep him off the streets in between after school in the gym, and she'd pick him up. And, you know, he'd be there training with the guys. And one night, it's either he wanted to fight or one night they needed somebody to substitute. And, you know, he had the problem. And the coach at the gym, to make sure that nobody lost their cards, kept everybody's card. So if he needed them, if he needed the card, they had it. So sure enough, they needed the guy, hey, Ray Robinson. Hey, whoa, there's no Ray. Okay, hey, you know what? Walker, you be Ray Robinson. And Walker won, no question that he liked it. And he said, this is perfect. I can fight. And my mother will know I'm fighting because my name is Ray Robinson. But enough said. Walker Smith Jr. Is considered by many the greatest pound-for-pound fighter ever. Ray Robinson was 77 over before he got his first title shot. Okay? No. I said 77, not 7. 77 and 0 before he got his first title shot. Okay? Because white America didn't want a black man to be welterweight champion. It took Ray Robinson 5 years to get a title shot. Okay? 5 years before he got a title shot. And ironically, to show you the greatness of Ray Robinson, he won a split decision, got knocked down face first, and got up. Now, the gentleman, Tommy Bell, who gave him such a heck of a fight, was the uncle of the lead singer of that great group, Kool and the Gang. When Robinson retired the first time, he was 132-2. He was 94-0 before he lost his first fight. He was 131-1, okay, before he lost his second fight. Enough said. And him and Joe Louis were close friends, and they did so much to help with the integration of the military. Joe earned $4.8 million during his ring career, but bad friends and business advice put him into debt. He had over $1 million to the IRS alone. Despite illness and personal setbacks, he worked hard to pay what he owed. It's amazing. It was said, Tyson, Lennox Lewis, some of these guys, Holyfield, they earned more in one fight than Joe Louis. Ollie Frazier. Which will be next month, will be the, 50th anniversary of Ollie Frazier 1? I think it'll be the 51st anniversary of Ollie Frazier 1. They made $2.5 million. Together, that night, they alone made more than Joe Louis made his whole career. Ray Robinson made $3 million his whole career. So together, $8 million, both of these giants, their whole career. And Ali, I remember when he fought Larry Holmes, made $8 million in that fight alone. And not to say all the money she had made in between. Joseph Louis Barrows, only lost two fights his whole career, never as a champion. Okay? He was undefeated. He lost three fights. Remember three? No. He lost to Max Melling before he became champion, never lost while he was champion, and then he lost to Ezzard Charles and Rocky Marciano. Three fights, 72-3, just considered by many to be the greatest heavyweight champion of all time. The old-timers, Lenny Lewin, Bill Gallo, Art Rush Jr., Art said, hey, my time, my guy, Joseph Louis Barrows. And, wow, you can't say enough about Joe Louis. I remember they said he and Holly were conversating one time, and he told Holly, you know, they used to say I had a bum in a month club. He said, you know what? You would have been in that club. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports and Depth, the show. We taking a break from the Mills Rolls part of our show and talk black history. Let's do a little Motown here. Motown, Berry Gordy. Those of you who may not remember, but there was a time, that's a great song, Camelot. And Motown was the Camelot of black music. Wow. The Temptations, The Supremes, Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, Smokey Robinson and the Miracle, Martha and the Vandellas, Gladys Knight and the Pips, Mary Wells, The Marvelettes, Kim Weston, The Contours. The name goes on and on. The Spinners. And let's do a little contest for you, okay? And we're going to... what Motown supergroup that now has 11 gold and platinum albums used to be the opening act on the Jackson 5 tours? This is a quiz. That was the Commodores. Commodores used to be the opening act for the Jackson 5, Michael and his brothers. And as you can see, they went on to do quite well. Now, there was a time that four major television stars of the 60s also recorded with Motown. And Paul Peterson of the Donna Reed Show, Soupy Sales, who just passed away not so long ago, the legendary Diana Carroll, why she has been such a, and took a quarter opening doors and just being a pioneer, along with the likes of Ruby Dee and a host of others as far as African-American actresses, which paved the way for Halle Berry to become the first ever African-American female to win the Best Actress Award. And Irene Ryan, who played Granny on a legendary show called the Beverly Hillbillies. A lot of people don't know that Berry Gordy first began his professional career as a lightweight boxer. And the Supremes, who are still today unquestionably the greatest female singing group of all times. Well, they originally was the Primettes. In fact, they were the Primettes, and they sung with a male group called the Primes, which later became the Temptations. And they were the number one male and female group in the history of Motown. In fact, it was ironic. They were the last female and male group to really be successful. And, you know, the first number one record in the history of Motown, the number one, was Please Mr. Postman. That was by the Marvelettes. The Marvelettes, and that was back in 1961. And there were four female singers who sung with the late, great Marvin Gaye. Mary Wells was the first. Kim Weston. Tammy Terrell, we had the most success with her. They had a slew of hits, Heaven Must Have Sent You From Above, If I Could Build My Whole World Around You, My Precious Love, and, of course, Diana Ross. Now, the Supremes came on the scene. Like I said, they were having a hard time, man, you know. They were called the No-Hit Supremes. When they got started, they never stopped. Starting with their first big hit, Where'd I Love Go, they had a string of five consecutive number one hits, unheard of, unparalleled, by a female group in the history of music. And those five songs were Baby Love, Come See About Me, Stop in the Name of Love, and Back in My Arms Again. Wow. It's just amazing. You know, just amazing. And in the 60s, the Beatles named their favorite singer, who was invited to tour with them. And their favorite singer was Mary Wells, who was the first great female singer in the history of Motown. The Contours, who got a big hit, Do You Love Me? Their Hubert Johnson was a cousin to Jackie Wilson. And it was Jackie who called Berry and persuaded him to give them a chance. Jackie was one of the great R&B singers today, considered by many to be the Black Elvis. In fact, at one time, you know, Jackie was an outstanding boxer himself. And not only that, Jackie at one time was the bodyguard, I heard, for the Supreme. Now, you know, the thing about the Contours, that song, Do You Love Me, Berry Gordy was looking for the Temptations to record that song. But they were someplace in church listening to gospel music. They were, so Berry, the Contours, okay, you know what, you guys try. But originally, Do You Love Me, okay, was actually slated to be sung by the Temptations, the original Temptations. Paul Williams, Otis William, David Ruffin, Eddie Kendricks, and Melvin Franklin, whose real name was David English, David Melvin English. And the, you know, it was such a fairy tale story, Motown, that originally Martha Reeves of the Vandellas, you know, before she became a famous singer at Motown and one of the legends there, she was a secretary in the artist's department of Motown Records. And I've always said that when Motown started to ebb, it was Michael, Tito, Jermaine, Marlon, and Jackie, the Jackson Five, that shot Motown again to heights unelevated and couldn't be superseded. I mean, and now the story was that Diana Ross discovered the Jackson Five, but it wasn't. It was Bobby Taylor of a group, Bobby Taylor and the Vancouvers, and he in turn turned them, told Gladys Knight about it, and it was Gladys Knight who brought the Jackson Five to Motown. But for a PR standpoint of view, and just looking so much more, I guess, glamorous and fairy tale wise, it was PR wise and orchestrated that it was Diana that discovered Michael. But no, with Bobby Taylor, big song was Banks. Does your mama know about me? Does your mama know about me? Will she understand? And he turned to Gladys. And, you know, Gladys Knight is about 8 years old. She won the Ted Mack Amateur Hour contest. Yeah, as a 7-8 year old girl, Ted Mack Amateur, and met her. What a beautiful lady too. And so she in turn brought them to Motown, and the rest, they say, is no doubt history. And a man who has done so much history-wise. But, you know, let's give a little more black history. And as we continue, Buffalo Soldiers led charge to restore black Western heritage, you know. And, you know, it's an amazing thing. The old Wild West, you don't hear and see black cowboys. Yet one out of every four cowboys in the days of the West were black. In fact, the fastest draw in Hollywood was Sammy Davis Jr. Sammy Davis Jr. was the fastest draw. What a marvelous, marvelous entertainer. He was the fastest draw in Hollywood. They led the charge to settle the Western frontier. They led the charge up San Juan Hill. Now Buffalo Soldiers, the unsung black heroes of the Old West, are leading the charge again. This time they're on the front lines of the movement to remind America of the African-American settlers, soldiers, scouts, cowboys, and Western heroes whom history and Hollywood forgot. And National Recognition of America's Forgotten Black Western Heritage will get a major boost when the Discovery Channel airs the Buffalo Soldiers. And this is back some time now, it's a story, but you know, you look at the historical facts about the Buffalo Soldiers. Until recently, black participants in the settling of American Western frontiers have been forgotten by history and Hollywood. As U.S. News and World Report recently reported, errors and misunderstanding of the African-American experience and the American West are commonplace. That is put in mildly. The legacy of both scholarly neglect and racist distortion. But now a burst of new scholarship is correcting the record and bringing to light much of the long-lost history of the true role played by African-Americans in creating the Western frontier. The Buffalo Soldiers were the black enlisted men who made up the 9th and 10th Cavalries, part of about 5,000 African armies Americans recruited by the U.S. Army to serve on the frontier after the Civil War. Each cavalry regiment could accommodate 1,200 enlistees, 12 companies of 100. The nickname Buffalo Soldier was a badge of honor given to soldiers by the Native Americans. Their color and great courage in battle reminded Indians of this sacred symbol, the buffalo. The men wore the title with great pride. The 10th Cavalry even incorporated a buffalo symbol into their coat of arms. Most buffalo soldiers were ex-slaves who joined the army to escape the economic woes and discrimination of the post-Civil War era, hoping to build a new life. During the Indian Wars, the buffalo soldiers served throughout the Great Plains and mountains of the West. They served at virtually every military outpost on the Texas frontier, from Fort Brown at Brownsville to Fort Still, just across the Red River, to Fort Quinton on the Rio Grande. They participated in most of the major Texas operations against the Comanches, Kiowas, and Apaches. They also pursued Geronimo in Arizona, fought in the Ute Wars in Utah and Colorado, and helped suppress the Ghost Dance Uprising in the Dakotas. The buffalo soldiers were always the last to receive the latest issue uniforms and weapons. They had to mount the worst horse flesh in the army. They were seldom enough serviceable horses to mount all the men. That is really sad. Despite the extra difficulties, between 1867 and 1899, the buffalo soldiers had the highest rate of decorations of any U.S. Army units. They received 34 Congressional Medals of Honor. They also excelled with the lowest desertion rate and the least discipline problems. The buffalo soldiers continued to serve the nation after the settling of the West in Cuba during the Spanish-American War that led the famous Charge of San Juan Hill, clearing the way for Teddy Roosevelt's Rough Riders, who got the credit. When President Truman integrated the military after World War II, the African-American regiment consolidated into the remainder of the service. And that is a part of history, too, that it was President Truman who integrated the military. And just taking a look, a time out, as we continue to remember Black History Month here on Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solo Channel, Sports and Death for the show. We'll take a little break, come back, some more Millrose game, and maybe a rider or two will join me as we salute the 105th Millrose game. Salute Motown and salute African American Black History Month, remembering those who came before us, who paved the way before us. If you don't know your past, sad. You got to know who came before you. You got to pay homage. And it's just sad sometimes that history does not portray the truth and those who have paved the way, not only for African Americans, of history. I mean, understand what the Buffalo Soldiers did is what the civil rights leaders did. It's what Martin Luther King, Abernathy, and Farmer, and Rosa Parks, and Biet paved the way, marched, brought about the civil rights that not only Africans and Americans have benefited from, but all Americans have benefited from, our Latin brothers and sisters, our Jewish, our Russian. And let's not forget our Jewish sisters and brothers who marched with us, who joined us. You know, the Freedom Riders, that sector of core people were killed. They were not only African-Americans that were killed there. But understand, the civil rights warriors, and once again, King and Farmer and Abernathy and Eggers, who Meredith, and a lot of names we never heard of, we'll never hear of. Rosa Parks. And understand about Rosa Parks here. You know, Rosa Parks was sitting in the black section of the bus when she was on the bus. She was in the black section of the bus. Okay? And now all of a sudden they wanted her to give her, a female, to give up her seat. You know, is that great line that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar once said that, you know, white people, when all else fails, when they don't have the money, they don't have the qualifications, they feel they should have what they want to have, and they should have simply because they're white. And you know that ain't right. Be right back.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Doc Stanley's Sports is up riding alone today. Posse's taking a little rest, and this is our Mill Rose game special, 105th Mills Rose game, historic night at the Garden, not on a Friday. And we're going to go back and now do some more interviews from the Mills Rose game. And just had your little black history. You know, Muhammad Ali was the first man ever to win the heavyweight championship of the world 3 times. Floyd Patterson was the first man to ever win the heavyweight of the championship 2 times. Once you lost the title, you never get it. You're the first man ever to regain it. And him and his son, Tracy Patterson, the only father and son ever to gain world championships. Ali became the first man to win it 3 times. And Evander Holyfield, the only man to win it 4 times. Evander, the real deal Holyfield. Muhammad Ali. My name ain't Cassie anymore. It's Muhammad Ali. And Floyd Patterson, who, until Mike Tyson came along, was also the youngest man ever to win the heavyweight championship in boxing. Some more black history facts. As I told you, this is the month back in 1964 that Cassius Marcellus Clay, beat Sonny Liston to gain the heavyweight championship of the world. I'm a bad man. Oh, my goodness. Okay, let's go back to more interviews. And let's talk. Well, he said he's a marked man. Let's get a chance to talk to him.
Was that the first time you ever...
You know what though? I was I thought this is actually gonna fit well this year, especially only for this race only, but this year alone. I wanna be wearing this. You know why? Because I've been that kind of guy. Every time I go to a race, I get people like, you see them making strategies to run against me. How well can they beat me? Every time you could tell. You don't even have to hear their conversation. The feeling, the way they talk, the way they look, you know they're looking at one guy. And so I always feel like, you know what, I've been a marked man for a long time, and you know what though, I got this t-shirt, and I'm like, I told my wife, this is the t-shirt for 2012. You watching the freshman tomorrow? Yes, I have to be careful, you know, that the freshman is going to be over there at my back all the time, and I think he's not afraid to take the lead as well, so I'm looking into, and half the race, he might actually take off and keep going, and that's going to be a good thing for me, and then I'm going to help him out also, you know, just if we can exchange the lead, he's a very strong kid.
That freshman is very cheap. Last question, and you know, it's like a catch 22. Armory is so advantageous for the runners, and yet the prestige of Madison Garden is not there. And you talked about Sam Cooke, change is going to come. It was time for change.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, when you look at how the direction of our sport, I believe, yes, that, you know, the track and field over there, that when the race was at Madison Square Garden, it was the greatest one. And I was telling somebody, as an athlete, you don't see these changes. You don't even see if there's anything changing. Because every time I train in Arizona, and I know that in my head, I'm just coming to run the Middle Rose Games, who want to make a mile at Madison Square Garden. To me, those two you could not take away. One could not survive without another. Middle Rose Games and want to make a win, be called it, it's not a Madison Square Garden. And I would always come to Madison Square Garden because I know I'm going to Middle Rose Games. So now I'm going to Middle Rose Games at Armory. It took me aback a little bit to kind of get used to that. And then I realized, well, I think always change is necessary, and I'm going to support this change. I'm going to support this change by actually going in there and being part of the new Mills Rose Games, because if it's going to get up to a good start, we should be always be ready to support it. Because it's, first of all, the most important thing is we want to keep the races in America. A lot of them doesn't exist. You go to Germany, all the races that used to be going on in Germany in 1990s, all the way to 2000s, some of them have gone because there's no finances. We've got Amory Foundation taking on a great race like this. I support it. I support the USATF putting another race also at Madison Square Garden. The more track meets we have in the nation, that is the best thing. And so I would support it, because if we don't support Armory, I mean, this race, Mill Rose Games coming to Armory, who's going to support it? Then it's going to die. Then nobody's going to be coming over to the Mill Rose Games anymore. And so I think to support the meaning of Mill Rose Games, we have to go all out, believing that the change has happened, and I think it's going to be for a good reason.
You're
up for the record
tomorrow, right?
Yes, I am. I mean, I got it in 2010, and then Kaelin Drupp did an amazing job. He broke it last year in Birmingham, and I think that is very good, very healthy for our sport in America, especially in my distance, the 5,000, 1,500. I like when I break it, somebody else going to do it. So he is in Arkansas running tomorrow, and he's trying to get the record that I ran last year in the 2 mile.
Mm-hmm.
8-10, and I'm going to get his 13-11. So it is healthy, it's good. Yes, and I think that is very good. And I'm sure if you were to talk to him right now, his motivation is to get that record. My motivation is to get that record. What does that do to American track and field? It elevates.
Mark Mann watch the freshman tomorrow.
Yes, Mark Mann might be watching the freshman.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Yeah. Thank you much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
The legendary Bernard Lagat, the Mark Man, considered the greatest mile of all time. Nobody's won as many Watermaker miles. You can just look at his dossier. USA Championships, International Championships, Collegiate Championships, Award and Honors. Career highlight holds 6 American indoor and outdoor records, 8-time winner of the Mill Rose Watermaker Mile, 2-time world indoor, 2-time world outdoor gold medalist, 2-time Olympic medalist, 4-time U.S. outdoor champion. Mark Mann, Mark Mann, you are the man. And Jean Shure, you know, it's funny. She was talking about last event, and I was, you know, it's amazing you learn so much. Doc Sandy Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Network, the show. This is our Millrose Game Show. And you, you know, you watch the pole vaulters, and you think, you know, they use basically the same vault pole. But she was saying some things about, like, she didn't use one of her favorite poles because usually on the first jump, you're kind of just, like, feeling things out. You know, like, okay, the first pitch you throw, hey, you can take the first pitch. Maybe it's a good pitch to swing on. She talked about breaking a record when she was just trying to ease into things. She is the world record holder, American record holder, Jean Shure. She went to Fendora High School and Roberts Western College in upstate New York, so she's a New Yorker. And she became American world record holder in the women's pole vault. Let's talk to her as we continue to salute the 105th Millrose Games at Germany this time and on a Saturday. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network. Let's talk to Miss Shure.
Gentlemen, was that the first time you
ever, you know, on the first try, been so successful?
You know, I've jumped the American record on the first try before, but I think I jumped it knowing I was going to jump it.
You jumped it with a good pole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I jumped it with a pole I knew I was going to make it on. So, you know, that was a surprise, just the first attempt.
What's the adjustment like with the poles? I mean, why would you go with a bent pole, you know? Just give us some feeling on adjustments. Because people understand, you know, they think you jump with the same pole
every
time.
You know, I think it's like golf. You know, some people don't like their 4-irons and they like their 5-irons. You know, I have poles that are my favorite, but you have to go to poles that is your strength. So if I'm 150 out, I'm going to hit my 8-iron, you know, where someone else might hit their 7 or their 9. So you go with the strength that you have. And right then I had to go with what I call my 5 pole. And that pole I'm a little iffy on sometimes, but I went with it, and it was a success.
Again, you know, Madison Square Garden, prestige, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But Omri, does that feel like it's a better venue for you to perform in?
Yes, you know, I'm pretty excited. I've had, you know, I've been in the Garden before and competed, and haven't had a lot of success there. So I'm hoping that, you know, I can come here and, you know, do well in Millrose and, you know, have it at the Armory. And I heard it's going to be electrifying out there, so I'm excited.
New York's always special for you?
Yeah, it is. Just being a New Yorker myself, so it is special.
No, what a pole vault. What got you into that?
My husband really got me into it.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd it come about?
You know, he's actually saw me playing basketball and thought that I could be a pole vaulter. So, yeah. He was an assistant coach at the college I was at, and I was playing basketball. But when he approached me, you know, at the time, I was like, my basketball coach is not going to let me do this. And so, you know, after the season, that's when I started to mess around. So it was my senior year in college. So he really talked me into it.
Basketball, have you always followed basketball?
Yeah, not that much. I like to play it, but I don't follow it.
Really?
Yeah, I follow track more now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blink. We're the Network Rainbow, so the channel Sports Network for the show. So we'll be closing pretty soon, but that's your Millrose game. It's the first time ever at the Armory. First time ever on a Saturday. And but you got some great athletes going to be there tomorrow. And it's just, I want to thank everybody for stopping and talking with us here on Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel. Sports in Depth is your show. And as always, we will close With Larry Hardy, she's saying goodbye. Live your life today. If you stand for God, God tomorrow. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others. It's Richie Payne.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
And with that, we will leave, closing out and realizing that the doctor today was riding alone. It's the 105th Millsrose game at the Armory tomorrow night. And once again, thank you for joining us. And remember Black History Month. And the next time we will talk about some of the inventions that African Americans have made, like the elevator, hey, and the cell phone. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel. Sports in Depth is the show. I'll close with a prayer. Dear Lord, thank you for another show. Thank you for health. Thank you for being alive. Thank you for food and our belly, clothes, and our back. More importantly, Lord, that your way be our way. Give us an heart, Lord, what we want, what we need. And we need you. And we thank you for being our God. In Jesus' name, the Lord. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports Step on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel. Sports and Death is your show. Thanks for being with us. We'll be with you Sunday night. Doc and the Posse, one more time, we'll bring you Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel. Sports and Death is your show. We want to do some quick birthday shout outs. Eddie Murray, the 24th. Bill Russell's birthday will be on the 12th. Hank Aaron had one on the 5th, along with Roberto Alomar. And my brother James on the 7th. The 6th, my Uncle John, it always happens to be the birthday of George Herman Roof. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel. Sports is after the show. Live your life today. You have to stand before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others is when you pay for your space on earth. The Son of Man came to serve, not be served. That's God.